Live from the Emerald City in Seattle, Washington, the UFO Bigfoot paranormal hotspot of the Pacific Northwest. Coming directly to you, listening in around the world, this, my friends, is Spaced Out Sunday. I am your host, Michael W. Hall, the paranormal lawyer, occupying the captain's chair tonight for SRR headquarters. We welcome you to tonight's show, including all of our listeners on the digital side at Revolution Radio. And don't forget, you can always find our archives for free at youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Just do us all a favor and hit that subscribe button. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including rocking out to some Bumblefoot, shopping at our Spaced Out Radio store, and catching up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire, and so much more. Tonight's show is brought to you by Chive Charities. Help make the world 10% happier by donating to Chive Charities today. You can find them on our website. And tonight we are having a wonderful show scheduled for you with author and researcher Michael Lee Hill, who is talking to us about indigenous knowledge of the Starkeepers. And of course, we got Peter Davenport every week at about this time from the National UFO Reporting Center, where we are going to talk about initially some UFO sighting reports from around the globe. So sit back, relax, get ready for that winter solstice that is fast approaching. Grab something nice and warm or hot to drink, or cold, doesn't matter, and sit back and relax and enjoy Spaced Out Sunday. First of all, let's introduce you to Michael Lee Hill. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
I'm sure.
Hey, man, it's easy to remember your name.
Yes, we're going to have the Michael Show tonight. Michael Lee Hill and Michael W. Hall. And I'm looking forward to our time together. Talking about what you bring to the table as far as your research goes with the star indigenous tribes around the globe and what they know about the whole idea of truth and reality. So that'll be fun. But you and I, first of all, get to kick back and relax and kind of co-host together with our buddy Peter Davenport. Hello, Peter. Are you there?
Good evening, Michael and Michael. You're right, Michael. It makes it easy with both of you having the same name. I don't have to shift gears to address you.
Yeah, like I said, I'm really looking forward to what you got to share.
I'm looking forward to your interview. I'll be tuned in at the bottom of the hour after my appearance. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, most of all about Indian mounds. I've been on the Indian Mound at Cahokia, Illinois.
Oh, yes.
Northeast of St. Louis, Missouri, my hometown. And
yeah, there's a lot coming out on the surface right now about that whole subject.
Yeah, I hope you'll talk about it during your presentation later in the program.
I was told Michael is a fan of the subject as well. And it's very exciting for me to talk about it with people that know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're a UFO aficionado as well, from what I learned just a few minutes ago.
I've had my own experiences that led to actual physical contact with them, but even above and beyond that, I've been contacted by the Pentagon program via Bigelow Aerospace and learned a lot from them. I became a researcher of my own mass event of the Lake Erie UFOs, so... Yeah, I've been thrown smack dab into the middle of it, and I'm totally cool with that.
Well, good for you. It's nice to make an appearance with a fellow colleague on UFOs, two fellow colleagues between the two of you. And I have 8 good reports, Michael, that I've prepared for tonight's program.
Oh, let's go. Let's get into it then. That sounds interesting.
These are exciting. these are events that have occurred allegedly within the last 72 hours. And I have to say allegedly because the reports are based on what people have simply written down and submitted, but they're the best reports that have come in by, to my eye anyway.
Yeah.
And they're really good. The first report comes from this past Tuesday, the 22nd of October, of course, 2020, from Austintown, Ohio. The gentleman writes that at 8:50 p.m. this past Thursday, again, three nights ago, he was driving on Interstate 76 eastbound when his attention was drawn to an object up in the night sky that at first he presumed was just a landing light on an approaching airliner. He was driving east and it appeared at his between his 10 and 11 o'clock position, so at his quartering left. And as he got closer and closer, he began to realize that this wasn't a standard landing light because it appeared to be hovering perfectly still. And as he got closer to it, he looked out his left-hand window, the driver's side window, looking north, and he saw, allegedly, a dark gray or black disc in color, black in color, a triangle. I'm sorry, I was momentarily distracted by another report. He saw a triangle. And the triangle, although it was hovering motionless, according to him, it was pointing its nose to the west. And he's very specific in stating that the light on the nose of the craft, the nose of the triangle, was strobing or blinking very rapidly, but the two lights on the tail end of the triangle, on the two vertices or points on the triangle, on the eastern side of it, were solid lights. They were unwavering lights. He said he wanted to take a picture of it. He was tempted. It was so dramatic that he was tempted to stop on the interstate or even go back if he could get turned around. He wanted to see it more closely. But this is near the east side of the Meander Reservoir, he says. That means nothing to me, but probably means a lot to people in our audience who are from the state of Ohio. But he says, he goes on to write that it was with total disbelief that he viewed this object. It apparently was quite a dramatic sighting.
Oh, my. A big black triangle hovering over a reservoir. Yeah, there you go.
And this isn't the last triangle I'm going to be talking about tonight. Second report I'd like to talk about, Michael, is occurred on the next night. This is this past Friday, two nights ago, at about 8 p.m., he doesn't specify the exact time, from Santa Clarita. And a gentleman writes that he saw, as in the first case I just talked about, he saw one light at what he thought was a very high altitude moving southwest over Santa Clarita, California. Didn't seem to be traveling fast, but what attracted his attention immediately was he saw the light flash, a very bright flash, and suddenly there are now two lights in the sky. Apparently the first one either split or a second light streaked up to it so fast that the witness couldn't see its movement. But the interesting part of this is when the two lights first appeared in the night sky, they suddenly started rotating around one another, swirling around each other. So what they were, God only knows. But it's a very interesting report, very well written, and I suspect the source of the report is a very skilled observer. He writes very well.
Yeah.
The third case I'd like to talk about comes from St. George, Utah, down in southern Utah, a gentleman was outside setting up a camera to do some astronomical photography. So he's probably a skilled sky watcher, at least, perhaps even a skilled astronomer. And he didn't happen to capture the object with his camera, but he saw a formation, a triangular formation of lights that he saw streaking across the night sky. He says that if he hadn't been looking at the right part of the sky, they probably were moving so fast he wouldn't have noticed them. But three bright dots, just a little bit less bright than Mars, and as a sky watcher, he's probably able to make a fairly accurate determination of brilliance or brightness. And he said they were moving so fast that his eyes could not follow them, keep up with them, and they disappeared behind a nearby building. So,
oh my!
My first suspicion would have been the triplet of marine satellites that the Chinese maintain for military purposes, I presume.
Yeah.
These lights apparently covered so much of the sky in a very short period of time that they almost certainly were not satellites. Satellites don't travel that fast. So a very good sighting. And again, it occurred just two nights ago, Friday the 23rd of October. And one of the phenomena I'd like to talk about is a resurgence of the Starlink satellites that have been launched by Elon Musk out of Cape Canaveral. Last night, the hotline and our associated website received somewhere between 40 and 50 reports of what I think are Starlink satellites. However, the reason I mention it, other than to alert our listeners to the fact that if they go out tonight and see 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 satellite-sized lights in a straight line moving overhead, they won't call the hotline in a panic and they'll recognize that they're Starlink satellites. But there's an exception, there's an anomaly that is appearing in some of these reports. Some of the witnesses are swearing to me that they saw not only the satellite-sized lights moving overhead in a nose-to-tail fashion, but they saw actual craft apparently in proximity to these lights or being obscured by them in some way or another. And I don't know what to make of this. This has been going on for over a year, people claiming that they're seeing something quite palpable, quite visible, other than the Starlink satellites. But I mention it just to alert our listeners to the possibility that if they see these objects, they'll pay special attention.
You know, that is very interesting, Peter, that people are realizing what the Starlink satellites are now. I think a little bit more than they did a few months back, but now they're being discerning and seeing other things in conjunction with them. I'll tell you how that is interesting to us, because the UFOI team guys that I am involved with myself literally took the Starlink satellite feed of back in March, you know, and we're not March, but around that area when they first started throwing them up there, and they actually were able to point out some UFO you know, exciting reports with their own Starlink feed, you know, of the booster rocket as it's coming back down to the planet, you know, after it gives the Starlink satellite booster a ride up into space. So I'm thinking that there could be some activity, UFO activity, that is kind of in conjunction with what's going on in the Elon Musk launchings. Maybe they're curious as we are of what's going on up there.
Well, it's fascinating because they're definitely interested in what NASA was doing, you know?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
It does. Oh, this is good stuff, Peter. Keep going. This is fantastic.
The next report I'd like to talk about comes from New Windsor, New York, which is just north of New York City on the Hudson River, I believe it is. This comes from last night, the 24th of October, Saturday, at 1928 or 7:28 p.m. A gentleman writes that he was invited to come outside by a friend who was hollering at him. And his friend pointed up in the sky, looked up in the sky, and he saw, he alleges, a wide saucer, as he describes it, with square lights, large and non-moving. That is, the craft was large and not moving. It was hovering motionless in the sky. He estimates that on the side of this craft, he could see somewhere between 10 and 15 square windows. So clearly not a blimp being mistaken for a UFO, which sometimes happens, I know from experience. But he points out that, goes on to describe how this object was just floating, non-moving at all. It wasn't moving at all. And that's unusual, he points out, because there was a wind in the area. And his impression is it should have been moving if it hadn't been intentionally being kept in one spot.
Oh, my. So, that is reminiscent, by the way, of the Barney and Betty Hill craft that Barney Hill was looking at through those binoculars and the windows that he was seeing. Now, did this person name or mention that there was anything in these windows?
He doesn't, but
yeah.
If I have time, I will contact him and ask him that question. That's a very good question, Michael.
You know what we ought to do, Peter, and we've talked about this at one point, and maybe we'll just put out the thought for people who would be interested in calling in to New Fork with their sighting reports. If they're willing to come on our show for 5-10 minutes and just tell us a little bit more detail about what their sightings are, we could interview a few of these folks.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. I'm all in favor of that.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that offline and get something set up.
Nice. That'd be a lot of fun.
This gentleman from New Windsor writes that all his life he's been an absolute skeptic on the subject of UFOs, but this one has forced him to back off that position.
Yeah, a hovering craft with square windows, that'll do it for you.
Yeah. And the next report I'd like to share with our audience is very similar to the one from New Windsor. This comes from Wilmington, North Carolina. Again, last night at, I believe, the same time, 1928 hours or 7:28 p.m., the gentleman writes that a group of friends and he were on an island near Wilmington, North Carolina, and they saw what they thought was a comet in the distance. But this comet proceeded to approach their position, and they began to see that it had depth and dimension to it. And it turned out to be a long disk with approximately 10 equally shaped and uniform white lights. All seven of the people in the group he was with saw this object, and they were all flabbergasted by it. So in short, his short description is a long disk with approximately 10 round uniform lights. Unfortunately, he doesn't describe whether the lights were on the craft or around the craft. That's a detail that he doesn't touch on, but very similar to the sighting from New York, Windsor, New York.
Well, it sure is. I mean, and that's not... Let's see, Wilmington, North Carolina, and then New Windsor, New York. My gosh, that's not that far away for a craft like that. And they both had glowing white windows for some reason.
Lights or white windows, or light-colored windows anyway, that allowed a person perhaps to peer into the interior of the craft.
Oh, my word. These things are not being stealthy any longer, Peter.
No, they're not at all. And I'm glad you raised that point, because it's a point I frequently make, or have been making during interviews, is whereas in past decades, we used to be dealing principally with distant lights in the sky, and that has changed in ufology now. So what we are getting generally is not just lights in the sky, but actual palpable craft that have dimension to them and details that the witnesses can see. So,
yeah. Wow.
It's very interesting.
Seems really fascinating how they're making their visibility more open, but simultaneously, you got the government coming forth stating that we're not alone and they've been here all along. So yeah. It seems like things are coming to a head.
That's my impression too, Michael. And my opinion is our government probably has a long-term agenda to do precisely what you say. And it certainly appears to be consistent with what's going on.
I agree. Exciting times.
It's exciting times to be doing what we're doing, that's for sure. Oh, my, yeah. Peter. Well, listen, there was one thing you wanted to mention. I think we're going to go for it if we have enough time here, about President Clinton's issue and a UFO sighting. Do we have time to go through that?
I think I can do a brief version of it.
Okay.
Probably most of our listeners have heard of the Phoenix Lights event of March 13th, 1997, 23 years ago. Hard to believe, Michael.
Oh, wow.
What a lot of those witnesses may not be aware of is fact number one, the U.S. military was raised from Defense Condition 5 to Defense Condition 3, skipping 4 altogether, on the basis of the Air Force intercept of one of the craft over Camelback Mountain in downtown Phoenix. But the interesting thing is, the second interesting point is, that was the very night that President Clinton allegedly injured the ligaments of his knee to the extent that he had to be spirited back to Washington, D.C. To undergo reconstructive surgery of his knee. I think that's a lot of too much coincidence for me to accept. And I raise the point because we're in a presidential era now because of the upcoming election on the 3rd of November. I thought people would enjoy hearing about that incident. President Clinton was flown that Thursday morning down to Florida, either Orlando or Miami. And he spent the day golfing with Greg Norman, the professional golfer from Australia. And the president overnighted at the golfer's home, at Greg Norman's home. And the official story is that the president was holding a ham sandwich in one hand and a soft drink in the other, and his knee just spontaneously gave way underneath him. Well, that could be. I can't deny that. But if I were to meet with the president, I would ask him whether he would consent to have a qualified medical team inspect the surgical scars that no doubt would linger on his knee, on the skin of his knee, as a result of the alleged surgery. But my suspicion is the president either was not injured, or he was injured in the course of being evacuated from the home of Greg Norman, and it had his alleged injury, whether indeed it was a real injury or not, was related to the Phoenix Lights event. I just thought our audience would enjoy hearing about that possible correlation between the Phoenix Lights event and President Clinton's injury.
Oh, my. You know, that is something I had not heard of, Peter, the idea that there was a major DEFCON event that same night. Yes. The Phoenix Lights appeared over Phoenix in 1997. Now, by the way, I want to give you all the kudos in the world because you were the news source that broke that story at the time when no one else would have touched it. I remember that you literally jumped all over that story at the time, and that was the breaking point in that story.
Well, thank you for the kudos. I believe you're correct. I was talking about that possible correlation on the next night, the 14th of March, 1997. And I'm flabbergasted that the press has not picked up on this and gone with it, because it's very suspicious, in my opinion, the fact that the two events occurred apparently within seconds or certainly minutes of one another, right after the Air Force had intercepted one of those objects over Camelback Mountain. The object, by the way, we can do the trigonometry. It was 9,000 feet above ground level, and it subtended an arc of 135 degrees. And for those people who remember their trigonometry, that translates to a craft that was 8.23 miles, statute terrestrial miles, in width. So it was a very dramatic night.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, people that I heard that actually cited that report there said that if they put their arms up and held a newspaper out at arm's length, it still would not cover this object that was so large over them. Listen, we have got to go, Peter. We are at the bottom of the hour already, and we have to take our break as well. But give out, if you could, the hotline for the National UFO Reporting Center and your mailing address in case someone would like to send you a little stipend of, helping you with your expenses.
Thank you, as always, for allowing me to do that. The hotline number has been the same for 46 years this month. It's 206-722-3000. 206-722-3000. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 456, P.O. Box 700, P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, 99122. And our website is ufocenter.com for all those written reports that we'd like to receive from our listeners tonight.
Fantastic. What a great reporting slot we had for the top of the hour here. So, Michael, you and I are going to hold on here. We're going to bid Peter a fond farewell for the evening. And Peter, enjoy. Thank you for all you're doing out there, and we will see you next week, if not sooner.
Good. And I'll be tuned in 6 minutes. So I'm looking forward to the program, and thanks for the airtime, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, here we are, folks. We'll be right back with more of Spaced Out Sunday.
Hey, Spaced Out Radio fans. It's John Resnick, founder of the Chive and Chive Charities. Our goal is to make the life of veterans, first responders, and those with rare medical conditions 10% happier. We do this by donating one grant item, ranging from bands to therapy programs to prosthetic limbs, to those who need it most. To contribute to Spaced Out Radio's official charity, head over to chivecharities.org and become a donor today.
I'm feeling a little spicy tonight. What to do? What to do?
Why not get Bumblefuck?
4 million Scoville units of pure hard rock. Bumblefoot hot sauces come in 3 flavors. The burning Bumble F***. Tone it down a bit with Bumblicious and throw the sauce on everything.
Spicing up. Bumble me, baby. Bumblefoot hot sauce. Get it today at kajons.com.
At spacedoutradio.com, we are keeping you up to date on all the news with the SOR Newswire. Captain Shirk leads the team that is bringing you the news of the day and exclusive stories on everything paranormal and supernatural. It's free to read, it's updated daily, and it's right there for you. The SOR Newswire is a one-stop shop for the news of the day. Check it out at spacedoutradio.com today.
Are you looking for great advertising value for your company? Look no further than Spaced Out Radio. We have a multitude of places to get your name out there, including commercial ads during the show, special promotions, and banners on our website. Our audience has proven to support the companies that support our show. We can make your budget work for you. For more information, please contact us at sales@spacedoutradio.com.
Hey everybody, the SOR Space Travelers is open. For just $5 a month, you can hang out with Dave and our crew privately in our members-only section. With your signing, you'll receive newsletters on what's going on with Spaced Out Radio. You'll have direct contact with the host during the show in our chat, live streaming videos, and a great form for your posts and more. Become a space traveler now at spacedoutradio.com.
Are you addicted to the woo? Good, me too. This is Dave Scott, and you can woo it up with me every Monday through Friday, starting at 9:06 Pacific, 12:06 a.m. Eastern, for 3 hours of great entertainment in the subjects you love. UFOs, ghosts, cryptids, intuition, yes, we hit it all 5 days a week. Look for us at spacedoutradio.com, where together, my friends, we own the night.
You wanted new SOR gear, and now you can have it. The SOR Vault is fully stocked with t-shirts, hats, hoodies, mugs, and everything in between with great logos for you to choose from. So head on over to spacedoutradio.com, click on the SOR Vault, and go shopping. Pricing is quite affordable, and you can look good representing your favorite show. So go to our website and pick up your new SOR wear at the SOR Vault today.
Need that weekend supernatural fix? Look no further than Spaced Out Saturday right here at spacedoutradio.com. I'm Stacey Edwards.
And I'm John Edwards. Each Saturday night, Stacey and I are going to bring you the best in paranormal, cryptids, UFOs, you name it, and we're going there.
It's all about the experience and to share the knowledge with all of you.
So tune us in every Saturday night on Spaced Out Saturdays, starting at 9:06 p.m. Pacific, 12:06 a.m. Eastern, only at spacedoutradio.com.
From the heartlands of Canada to beards around the world, we know how to take care of you. Fill your follicles with the Mighty Moose Beard Oil. All our oils and balms are handmade and 100% natural ingredients because we care about your beard. And hey, use the promo code SOR2019 and get your Mighty Moose Beard Oil today. You can check us out on our website, mightymoosebeard.com.
We're adding to the entertainment online for Spaced Out Radio. I'm Amber Beckrud, and I want to invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and check out Cryptid Tales, where I will take you on a journey into some of the strangest legends and lore from around the world, relaying the stories to you of the strange creatures and experiences that people have had throughout time. You can find Cryptid Tales at youtube.com/spacedoutradio. And while you're there, don't forget to check out our free archives and leave a comment. See you there.
Cold drinks, great food, and the best music in Vancouver. The Moose Vancouver is the place to be, open until 2 a.m. nightly. Everything on the menu starts at just $6.95. Who serves food that cheap anymore? At the Moose, you'll never know who you'll run into. Rock stars, actors, athletes. It's the place everyone wants to be. So join us at the Moose Vancouver. The Moose Vancouver, the official party bar of Spaced Out Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Ryan Stacey from the Experiencer Support Association, otherwise known as TESA. We're glad to team up with Spaced Out Radio to help investigate your experiences on the SOR Sightlines Report. Together, we'll investigate the strange sightings and occurrences you've had. We're looking for answers just like you. So fill out a Sightlines Report on the Spaced Out Radio website and let's figure out what's going on together.
Oh, it helps if I turn the microphone back on when I come back. We are back here, Michael. Tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen, features a researcher and author, Michael Lee Hill, and his knowledge and research into the indigenous knowledge keepers, elders, educators, and scholars who share and exchange information and knowledge concerning the reclaiming and preserving, revitalizing the star knowledge of indigenous communities around the world. I am really excited to have this researcher along with us tonight. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's about the latest I've ever done in an interview, but I've had my coffee, so I'm good.
Good. Well, we're going to... By the way, what time zone are you in?
I'm in Eastern Standard Time, so right now...
Oh, my.
Well, 12:41.
Yeah, this is real late for you. You're going to be burning the midnight oil tonight, so thank you for being with us. We, of course, are out here in the Seattle area, so we're just getting started in the evening right now, and you're about ready to go.
I'm a midnight owl anyhow, so it's all good.
Good for you. Hey, well, I always would like my audience to know a little bit about my guests from the very beginning now. And other than the fact that you are a indigenous knowledge keeper yourself, I know a little bit about the fact that you're quite a musician and have been most of your life. Let's talk some music. Tell us a little bit about your background there first.
No, it's all more related to everything we're going to share. You know, the universe is being sung into existence. And, you know, star knowledge is all the knowledge of light and sound. And so it's all related, definitely. But yeah, you know, the whole Native American Indian star knowledge movement, which now the University of Ottawa in Canada, if you just go to their website and type in star knowledge, you'll see that they're now offering college courses and events on every solstice and equinox of all kinds of elders sharing their star knowledge of, you know, pretty much Chief Cole and White Eagle started the movement, and I believe it was 1996, and he said, your viewers might know he has been on Ancient Aliens many times. He is the spiritual leader and chief of the Dakota. And he brought me into the fold as the official spokesman of the Mound Builders. I'm Seneca Iroquois bloodline. But we can get into all that. But that was pretty far down the line, you know. It all started for me. So you're just a little in a nutshell. I started filming UFOs over Lake Erie, and this was probably around 2005. And I just accumulated quite a library. One of the clips went viral and got over a million views. So that ended up getting the History Channel knocking on my door. Excuse me real quick. And at first they just wanted to do... They were doing a show on Skywatchers, and I had a 5-minute segment. But they had just interviewed another Skywatcher, and they found out he had filmed the exact same orbs of light that I'd filmed over Lake Erie. Had the same story of contact with the intelligence behind the phenomenon, but they found out he had a very rare blood anomaly that came up in his military. They did a thorough medical testing because they were going to send him overseas. So the History Channel thought, wouldn't it be weird if these two guys that don't know each other, but their stories are so similar, what if this other guy, meaning me, had the same blood anomaly? So they ended up sending us both to Boston to have our medical and blood work done by a Harvard professor whose name was David Systrom. And in that show, it ended up being the whole hour-long episode, by the way. And in Bill Burns' book, UFO Hunters, Season 1, the book, he reveals that it was our episode that actually got them renewed for a second season. Because, you know, Bill flat out in the episode, which is called Alien Contact, he said, I'm going to prove these guys are hybrids. And one of the other, you know, Pat Oosker was like, what the heck? Well, the History Channel really liked the drama. You know, imagine that.
Yeah.
So it ended up being a fan favorite, and it still is to this day. But the end of that show is when they revealed via the Harvard professor that I don't have normal human blood. And I know that sounds very strange, but it is what it is. I've actually had some people going, that's BS. You know, it'd be all over the news. I'm like, man, I'm not making this up. Go watch the episode. This isn't my opinion on the subject. Matter of fact, I was kind of not real happy with it. I was like, wait a minute, man. This isn't a TV show anymore. What are you talking about? Should I be worried?
This is your life that you're dealing with.
What are you talking about? Blood anomaly. And he said, what do you think unknown means? It's actually kind of not real nice about it, you know? I was like, well, he said, if I had to place a guess, I would guess that you have some type of virus that is tricking the brain into releasing these massive amounts of creatine kinase in your blood system. But that would be just taking a guess.
Let me stop you right there. The reason that I think that is fascinating is that literally... I was married for 30 years to a lovely Basque woman, Basque. I have four Basque children, and literally I know a little bit about the blood anomalies that you're talking about. I mean, that is fascinating to me that for some reason, some strange reason, you... and this other gentleman up there in the Michigan, Northern Michigan area here, were tagged somehow because of your anomalous blood background that you've got there. By the way, I want to make sure that my listeners know that Upper Michigan there, or Michigan, where you literally had those initial sightings reports.
Actually, it's Ohio, just so you know. It's a suburb of Cleveland called East Lake.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Cleveland. That basically is the same general area where J. Allen Hynek got in trouble with those Michigan swamp gas things up there. Remember that same time in the 60s? So there has been a lot of history with sighting reports up in that area.
Man, I found out so much. You know, that's fascinating about your wife and your children. Yeah, Basque is the exact same bloodline. It's... You know, not to jump in the deep end, but it's the remnants of the Atlanteans. And one of the first, you know, because Atlantis didn't go down in one big earth change. There's three. One was 51,000 years ago, and some of the Atlanteans went to the right. And, you know, and then 27,000 years ago was the biblical deluge, you know, the great flood. And more of the Atlanteans went to the right and into the Basque area and whatnot. But the elders stayed behind with a sinking ship, so to speak. And in the last earth change was 10,500 years ago. And for the first time, the remnants of the Atlanteans went to the left and came up into the bottom of the North American continent, meeting the Mayans first and teaching them the Mayan calendar and... you know, pyramid building and whatnot. But after a while, they left there and actually came to North America. People don't know that, but that's, they just found out that when the Mayan elders left the Yucatan, they went into Crystal River, Florida, and they just found a step pyramid in Crystal River, Florida. And it's a huge step pyramid. And they have it imaged with... ground penetrating radar on a drone. And so, you know, we started talking about the work I've begun with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. And we're going to be taking it to that mound site in Crystal River for the solstice. But yeah, Basque is the exact same bloodline that later on became the mound builders in North America. And they had to do something very specific with the blood, and that is to... like the Harvard professor said, he thought it was a virus that would trick the brain into releasing these massive amounts of what's called creatine kinase into the bloodstream. Creatine kinase is usually released when you've had a heart attack or had ripped a muscle, and it brings extra oxygen into the bloodstream to facilitate healing. The more creatine kinase that's in the blood, the more chi or prana you're holding, or electrical capacitance at a cellular level. So that gets into a whole other story, which we can get into, but yeah, it's cool. Did you know about the creatine kinase part of it?
You know, I did not know that part of it. I knew about the Rh negative factor, you know, the fact that they cannot figure out when this blood type showed up in the Pyrenees Mountains, you know, between France and Spain, and the fact that the literally the Basque language, from what I gather anyway, is not any related to any other language on the planet. So that's the only thing I really knew.
Ah, well, I can tell you one big hint in this is they've discovered a brand new blood haplogroup within the North American First Nations, and it's called haplogroup X2A. And it really throws the history books upside down, because the only place haplogroup X2A is found on the planet is right now about 3% of the Native American Indian First Nations have it. I have it. But it could be much higher, because the truth of the matter is not a lot of Native Americans have had their blood work done. But if you look backwards in time, where you find this haplogroup X2A, the most is in the giant skeletal remains that have been removed out of these mound sites.
Oh my word.
But if you keep going backwards in time, where you find the largest concentration of haplogroup X2A, that's going to tell you where home base is. It happens to be the hills of Galilee. This is just the new DNA testing. This is the lost tribe of Israel. I'm not religious in that kind of means, but like we were talking about, you know, man, I see this gets me jumping all around on different subjects. But
go
it's
ahead.
All related to, you know, after the History Channel revealed this blood anomaly, I was at a festival called Sirius Rising. This is in 2008, and I met the Anunnaki face-to-face. It wasn't channeling. It wasn't anything. And they said, we want to talk to you about this blood anomaly that was revealed on the History Channel, because it's truly an indicator that you're of our hybrid bloodline that was known as the Nephilim. And so, yeah, it's all connected, and it all gets into the North American Indian culture. You know what's funny to me, man? I can tell you the elders, the chiefs, the grandmothers, they know what I'm telling you right now. You know, because, you know, let me explain how that happened. I was adopted, so I never knew my heritage. You know, I had no clue how to even find out. People were like, dude, you look Italian. So I'm like, oh, all right, probably Italian then.
Yeah.
But after the History Channel, the Harvard professor told me, you know, we know you're adopted. If you can contact your biological parents, you probably should, to see if this is something hereditary or, you know, passed down through generations. So for the first time, I tracked down my biological mother. I met her. I met my two sisters. But that is when I found out about my Seneca heritage of the Iroquois. And so when I found out that, you know, I really never even looked into the subject of Native American Indian culture or whatnot. And I thought, man, how cool would it be to be able to meet the elders and the chiefs and the grandmothers of all these, you know, different tribes and whatnot. And obviously my next thought was like, well, how the heck is that going to happen? To me, I'm just a white guy, you know, I'm like the instant Indian. But sure enough, I was asked to speak at, it's called Angels and Aliens Conference, and Chief Golden White Eagle was the keynote speaker. And he just walked up to me out of nowhere. He said, would you come to my Star Knowledge Conferences? I need the Nephilim ambassadors to show up. We need your energy there. I'm looking around like, who's this guy talking to? You know what I mean? But before I knew it, you know, I was taken under their wing, and they recognized me as the reincarnation of an Iroquois chief. We'll get into that. He's known as the Peacemaker. And he was actually the person who united the Iroquois tribe of Indians, because they always were at peace with one another.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other story. But so Haplogroup X2A, your viewers could just go and Google that. And so there's DNA proof. By the way, that DNA haplogroup was only discovered, I believe it was 1998. That's not that long ago, you know?
You know, I think I read something about this, Michael, where they say that the oldest lineage of DNA on the planet is a Native American guy. Do you remember that article?
Yes, indeed.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know what I found out is, like I said, this bloodline actually goes back pre-diluvial, you know, pre-flood. And that, man, it's a deep subject. I'm having a little bit of trouble, because if I start, it might go on for a minute, but we got a lot of time, right?
Well, we do, but we got 4 minutes before the break, the top of the hour, if you want to, like, hold over till after that. But I was just kind of getting the idea that I'm corroborating what you're telling me, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
By the fact that you've got some ancient DNA running through your cells that is very unique. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from it, because we can get into this, but, you know, right along the same time frame as meeting the Anunnaki in 2008, I was approached by an individual named A.R. Borden, and he was the head of the NSA remote viewers. And to find out, the remote viewers are very involved with reverse engineering. So they knew of my contact with them as well, just like Bigelow. And so he took me under their wing and gave me a whole course of study, which I've released all of this, all of my study material and everything I got. I've released it to the world near the end of his life. He said the time for secrecy is over. And up until that point, he told me, I don't want any light shown back this way. So I didn't. You know, I'm a man of my word, and if I say I'm not going to do something, I don't. But when he said, now's the time for secrecy is over, release this through your networks. So I learned a lot about the bloodline. And a matter of fact, the group of the remote viewers told me they had about 200 members in that group. And there was 12 members that had my bloodline. And my numbers of creatine kinase would have put me in about the middle of those 12.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that was prevalent amongst remote viewers as well, that bloodline.
Well, it's like, if you think about it, if extraterrestrials are communicating through telepathy, then the ability to send your consciousness and perceive should be called remote perceiving, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny, because they didn't teach me that. I actually learned the ability to remote view and to change realities, I hate to say. I know it sounds woo-woo, but it came through the Seth material. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah.
That material changed my life, and I took it to heart, and I took those principles, and I applied them to my life, and I changed my life. Well, the NSA took notice. The head of that program said, there's not too many people that can tune in at will, and those that can are noticed, and so you were.
Oh, I'll bet. Oh, my goodness, Michael. We are now at the top of the hour already. Can you imagine? And we're going to take our break. And when we come back, we're